I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network. This is Greg Blaze, and on the line we have two Cutting the Curd regulars, Deborah Dickerson and Matt Rubiner. Thank you both for coming on the show. How are you today, guys?
Greetings.
Good, good.
Yeah, nice.
Hey, Deborah.
Hi, Matt.
It's nice to talk to you. Today was an absolutely brutal day of inventory and promotional retail garbage. So,
oh, shit, I got to do inventory.
Yeah, exactly. The end of the month, you know.
Just, keep the engine running.
Oh, God. Brutal. Brutal. So on today's show, we're going to talk all about cheese mites. For those of you who don't know about cheese mites, I'm sorry to break the news, but there are microscopic bugs that often consume the rinds of certain types of cheese. Most of the time, they're pests, but for a small handful of cheeses, they are a desired part of the aging process. Cheese mites belong to the same family of other not-so-popular bug species like lice and ticks. Yummy, yummy,
what?
Yummy. Yum, 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 yum. So my first question to both of you, and maybe, Matt, you can go first, is do you remember the first time you learned about cheese mites? Were you totally grossed out, or did you think, hey, it's delicious, so I'm going to eat it anyway?
No, I don't remember being grossed out. I was such a starry-eyed young proto-cheesemonger that, the notion thrilled me. But it was actually at Neal's Yard Dairy where I did this, brief little stage. And, of course, they stuck me in the cellar scraping mites, as was explained to me, off of Carfilis into a bucket of bleach under the tutelage of Beth Carlson, who I think you both remember, who
oh, yeah.
singing wow. songs about Malines at the top of her lungs while I while I got covered in vermin.
So the question was, which was the best company, Beth or the mites, huh?
Well, she was singing louder.
They still make Malines? Oh, my gosh. I haven't even heard anyone mention that for, a long time.
I don't know, but she wrote a very catchy tune about it and other cheese.
What about you, Debs? It must have been the Neal's Yard Dairy for you, too, or was it before then?
It was actually, I think the information came down from Randolph at Neal's Yard Dairy, but it was at Zingerman's, and we had this amazing refrigerated stand-up case behind the line, right, where we had all these cheeses, and we used to have races to see whose mites could move the farthest over the period of the shift. It was fascinating.
A little bit of bugs. Debs, what are the signs of mites, and what types of cheeses do they love the most?
They love natural rinded cheeses, and the signs of them are the craters in the rind of the cheese, or the what looks to be dust, tan bits of dust. And when you open a cheese that has been wrapped in paper and is covered with mites, you can smell them. They have, to my nose, they have a very particular odor. It's kind of a combination of ammonia and mites.
Yeah, it's like their mite poop is what it kind of smells like. It's like,
yeah, it's just, is what it is.
Yeah, but do they add flavor? I mean, do they add flavor to the cheese? Do they do anything positive for the cheese, do you think?
Well, I don't, actually. I'm a rind eater myself, but when I know that mites have preceded me, I tend to be a little bit leery. And to me, it's the ammoniation and the rind. If you look like at an Oso Arati, you know, it tends to be sticky, and it has a... the flavor is not pleasant to me. So I think that they destroy the rind. They hold moisture in with the dust that comes on top, and the result is indeed a flavor, but I don't think a pleasant one.
What about you, Maddie?
Well, you know, it's interesting because until I just kind of started reading about, well, that's not really true. I always considered mites, just like Deborah said, a pest, something you don't want on. There's something to be removed. I knew that they were an integral part, at least in the look of Mimolette, you know, the most famous
absolutely
mite infested cheese, which is this sort of Edam-like French cannonball that owes much of its at least visual character to a lunar scape of mite carvings on the surface. And I always imagine that to just be tradition. But a couple years ago, I started, some of these young whippersnapper cheesemongers referring to mited cheeses. We were in a cheese cellar in France when we were there for this cheesemonger competition. And people were pointing out, oh, this is a mited Beaufort, or this is a mited, this or that. And I just thought, mited? Seriously?
Yeah, what the hell's that?
This is something being applied to, in some way enhance the cheese. So that really struck me. And then as I was doing a little reading, Wikipedia and other scholarly sources, it kind of referred to a fruity, nutty flavor that the mites will eventually impart. But I can never get past the, like Deborah, I'm so sensitive to the smell of them, and I really feel that I can smell them before that. I can actually see their, I can't really see them so easily, but see their mite detritus. And, I've never thought of it as in any way enhancing of a flavor. I always thought it as just a nuisance and detracting from the flavor and to be brushed off as thoroughly as possible.
It's interesting because I've heard it described as a burnt flavor, which makes sense to me. I wouldn't have picked the word out. But in other cheeses, I've associated that word with a positive association. Mm. So I wonder how much of it is my knowledge of what they look like under the microscope.
Right, just because they're so creepy.
It will not allow me to put that flavor in a positive category, in a positive
attribute.
I look
like hell under a microscope, too.
But is it bugs? I mean, are you like, do you just not like bugs?
Or to the naked eye.
You're a flashy-looking guy, Rubiner. A flashy-looking guy. You're beautiful. Great face for radio. But I mean, is it true? I mean, there's bugs everywhere. I mean, there's bugs that are... on, there's flower mites, there's mold mites, dust mites. I mean, there's little bugs that live in, like, your eyelashes that, like, eat garbage out of your hair on your face. I mean,
Speak for yourself.
I mean, I don't know. I don't mind them, but I think it's interesting. There's some cheeses that are made with mites. When I was doing a little research, there's this German cheese called... I'm going to butcher this, Milbenkäse, which means mite cheese. And there's like a statue made to it, I believe. And it manufactures utilizes mites when the wheels, are ready to – or logs, whatever they're shaped like. The cheese is made from cork. They're placed in a box with mite dust and rye flour. And the flour provides an additional food source for the mites so that they'll still have an effect on the flavor of the cheese but consume less of the finished product. I don't know. That's a little weird to me. But I mean,
would you eat that rind, Greg? Would you eat that rind?
Truly, I might once or twice. I mean, I used to eat Stilton rinds, because I think I was just kind of a moron. But I would like eat Stilton rinds and try to convince myself that tasted good, and they were completely infested with mites. I remember. We had like Neil's Yard Dairy Stilton back in I think the 90s. There was like a big. I want to say, maybe I'm wrong, but I think there was a large mite problem there. That was the first time that I saw of it, or the first time that I saw cheese mites. And I remember them like jumping all around the counter. Jason Hines was like showing me them on like the inside of a wrapper of Stilton, and I was like, oh shit, there's bugs on my cheese, man. What's going on with that?
Right.
I know the perhaps it's apocryphal, but the Daniel Defoe.
spoke lovingly of when he was served Stilton, which by his description seemed like a very different cheese than it probably became. But that the mites were, you know, so liberally encrusted on the outside, you were issued a spoon with which to eat the mites, and he noted they tasted faintly of curry.
That's so weird,
and I remember,
man,
once at Formaggio back in the day, I think it was me and Nice Guy Vinny Maniacci. Can't go through a whole cutting the curd without bringing up Nice Guy Vinny. But we scooped up spoonfuls of it and we ate it and tasted faintly of curry.
That's weird. But is there a health risk? I mean, is it going to hurt you? Or have you ever heard of any health risks, like in terms of people ingesting mites?
I've heard of itchy skin.
Right.
I've never heard of anybody actually getting any sort of mite poisoning, no.
I have read that if you ingest enough amount not filled in, that you'll have an ulcerated stomach lining, which makes perfect sense to me.
I got that anyway.
Yeah.
There's also a mite in hay that is supposed to be thought to carry the mad cow disease. So ponder that.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That I did not know. I mean, I'm of a weird cross section, especially just working to be a cheesemonger for so long that I just assume that there are bugs that it's all bugs to me. Do you know what I mean? Like there are bugs. Bugs make the cheese. Bugs live in the cheese. Bugs live on the cheese. Bugs live on my skin. Bugs live inside my body. You know what I mean? It's all little bugs doing something. So yeah, I never found it to be particularly. I don't know. I guess I didn't take a hard stance on it because I'm not a cheesemaker. As a retailer, you know, it's different. And, you know, I mean, Matt, have you seen like a – have you ever got like an infestation, like a mite infestation at your counter?
Not at the counter, but in our storage areas and in the past and, you know, proper cheese, you know, caves and stuff. It's something – I remember when we opened, you know, what we alleged to be – I never knew if it was really true, but, you know, the first cheese cave in America – which was in the accountant's office downstairs after we removed her and stuffed it with Stilton's, and we tried. And I invented although I never saw much revenue on it, but I invented a simple mite removal contraption.
What's that?
Where it was specifically
Shop
for
vac?
Stilton's, and I took a 5-gallon bucket,
uh-huh.
Right, and I filled it with a weak bleach solution. And then I put over that an overturned milk crate, you know, your standard model milk crate, and the size was perfect so that the milk crate kind of rotated around the top. And, of course, it had holes in the top. So, and then you would put the Stilton there, and while turning the milk crate with a floor brush, you kind of brushed downward and got it off. But, you know,
it took it off.
Nice.
I'll be rich.
Yeah.
Rich, I tell you. But it got it off somewhat. But, you know, these cheeses we are getting, whether it be those or occasionally the, you know, the cloth-bound cheddars, they were just going to come in with mites, and there was just no way around it. And, you know, we used to think that, hey, if we put the particularly mighty ones down on the bottom shelves, they would be slower to take hold on the cheeses on the upper shelves. And it wasn't clear that that really worked. I think these things fly around pretty good, but
really, I thought it was true they only dropped down. Never.
Oh, really?
Did they
crawl
maybe
we were smarter
up.
Than
yes.
we thought.
That was my understanding, but I might have heard it from you, so I don't know.
Well, it's definitely wrong.
That is not right.
So we get lots of cheeses with mite here, not just Stilton's and not just cloth-bound cheddars. Occasionally we'll get meat with mites on it, which is a little disconcerting, but we'll get, you know, aged, prosciuttos made on a rustic scale, and there'll
yep.
be these kind of pockets.
I've seen that.
Yeah, actually, I don't even know for sure if they're mites, but they have the same sort of, you know, outward visible signs of, you know, dead mite crap. You know, chewed up cheese, whatever it is that causes that dust. So,
I think, and not to always go back to my whole shtick of like things were better in the olden days, but because they weren't. But I do feel like you know, that it certainly customs was more lax, because we definitely got like cloth-bound cheddar and we got mimolet that were just covered in mites. I mean,
yeah, you get those Cesar Losfeld ones.
Yeah,
dug deep with mites.
I mean, you could just bang, bang, bang them out on the counter, and it would just be this massive cloud that would like get on your skin and make you itch a little bit. But that same cheese, mimolet, made headlines in 2013 because the FDA, I guess, began detaining shipments of the cheese due to mites. From what I understand, there's no official like limit to how many mites can be there, but the target is no more than 6 mites per square inch.
Which, right.
Like, what the hell is that? How are you even supposed to measure that? That's like, it's insane. What are your thoughts on that?
It's impossible.
Right.
Right? Because
yeah,
they multiply every 10, they reproduce every 10 days. They live from 2 to 5 months. You take the piece of cheese, you put it in a lovely piece of cheese paper, perhaps slightly waxed on the inside to retain moisture, and you ship it for 3 weeks on a boat. Good Lord, right? You've got 100 new colonies. So it's impossible unless they're waxed, right?
That's what I've heard. That's the rind that protects them. But I've even gotten mimolets when I was getting a Dutch mimolet, which I believe is the original mimolet. I think the French stole it from the Dutch, or that's what I heard from the Dutch. And then, of course,
also
the French.
Also known as Edam?
Yeah, basically. And there was some sort of a dispute between, between Holland and France, and, then the cheese was made. And all those countries are, you know. They get cross with one another there. But I've gotten Dutch mimolet that had a layer of wax and they had the mites underneath it. That's a little bit tough. That's a resilient bug, man. I mean, you got a fruit fly lives for 20 hours or something like that. But these tiny little guys, they're there for a while, man. That's crazy. Really crazy.
I don't remember anything. Maybe you guys do it. I wasn't paying attention. But I don't remember much about any reports from the FDA about why specifically these mites were thought to be an issue. They just kind of issued these dictates and unreachable, mite per square inch targets.
That's
but has anybody ever, did they specifically declare, these mites are a hazard to human health because dot, dot, dot?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, why I think that's interesting is because they're not. I mean, we have our opinions on them because we know how they affect the flavor of the cheese, or how we. And some of those are experiential, we associate what they look like under a microscope or what they smell like, But I don't know if they're harmful or not. I don't.
But isn't it that it's not an ingredient, so it is viewed as a foreign object?
Right. But is it?
Oh, is that it?
Think that that's it. It's not an ingredient, and it's traveling, so it's deemed – that's my understanding.
So it's an organic – but it's organic matter that's considered a pathogen or something like that? I don't know.
But it isn't pathogenic, right? I mean, that's the thing. So we lose the traditional mimolet, or we did for a while. And how far does it go? I was reading somewhere that – it was probably in the early 1900s, where in America they were rejoicing in the production of block cheddar.
Sure.
Because when they were able to do blocks, they were then able to plastic wrap them and have no rind whatsoever, which meant no mites. So a serious labor savings, right? Another nod to technology.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know.
Have you seen that silent movie that's often referred to?
Yes, very good. Nice hunk of bread there.
Called Cheese Mites?
Yeah, it's like this little thing, and there's this, dapper English fellow sitting down reading his paper, which he's with a big chunk of Stilton, I believe, next to him. And he's got his magnifying glass, apparently, to enlarge the print of the paper.
Right.
This is like a 1903 silent movie, or maybe it was a series of short movies, each of which highlighted something filmed through a microscope. So anyway, this guy's, you can get it on YouTube, this guy's reading the paper, and then he glances over at the cheese, and then he sees, that it's actually absolutely crawling in these little bugs. And apparently, at least according to, again, the scholarly sources that I've read, Wikipedia and the like,
It was banned at some point, you know, as indecent and, you know, shouldn't be viewed by the common folk.
That video was? That's
the video, yeah. The Stilton was fine. It was just the video.
These are the things that we do in our spare time.
Yes.
So mites are out there, and they've been discussed, and they're interesting little critters. So we're going to take a short break and then come back, and we're going to talk a little bit more about cheese mites.
The one and only Dave Arnold brings the noise to Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday on Cooking Issues.
Coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn!
If the bomb was going to drop, and you only had 15 minutes, which is like, I can make a sandwich in 15 minutes. He would be eating a sandwich.
I'd kiss my wife, make a sandwich.
If you believe that it's all about to be over, why eat healthy? I'm not a freaking Neanderthal. I like a tempered ice cream sandwich. But it's the only way to get around it if you're a party master, because you're going to wind up, like, your kitchen's going to fill with dishes. And
some people have commercial dishwashers in their house.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
Really rich people.
For more mile-a-minute knowledge from Dave and the crew, listen to Cooking Issues, available on Heritage Radio Network, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. This is Greg Blaze with Deborah Dickerson and Matt Rubiner, and we are talking about cheese mites. I wanted to recite part of a John Updike poem called Mites to get us back into mite mode after the break. There's a lot written about mites. To be a mite at all, to be so small, you can rest as in a bunk bed beneath a flea's scales, or expend a lifetime in a single chicken feather, or the mite pouch of a carpenter bee. Think how nature slaved over these arrangements, 30,000 species of acarines, 50 from the Antarctic alone, and some found 5 miles up Everest or a mile down in the sea. Itch mites, cheese mites, monkey lung mites, each making its way through the several larval stages. These mini spiders, characterized by lack of a waist, lateral eyes, and tininess. We marvel, we pity, we loathe, we try to forget perspectives from which we are smaller yet. I'm also wasteless, so. I thought that was a pretty good poem.
So the question is, if there are indeed dust mites and cheese mites, and we're not trying to protect ourselves against the mites in our pillows, why are we going so overboard on the mites in our cheese?
Right.
Except they're so visible, and we are actually eating them, of course.
We are eating them, but you can contain them, right? They're a natural part of the cheese making. You can contain them with good sanitation and brushing your cheeses less than 10 days so they don't have time to procreate and go crazy.
Well, that's a good thing, and it leads me into my next question. Like, if you are a cheesemaker and you get a mite infestation, Deborah, how do you get rid of them?
Methyl bromide would be my last choice.
That sounds poisonous.
What?
rodents, flies, varmints, cheese mites, and any humans who are unfortunate enough to be within the vicinity. I know that there were cheesemakers who were using in England, and I'm sure beyond, but my experience is in England, were using methyl bromide. And it's just really toxic. It's just a really horrible, horrible gas. And it was finally outlawed. And now I know that people use... they use diatomaceous earth.
Yeah, what's that
all
about?
Which is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's volcanic soil, I believe, that is very, very fine, and you sprinkle it on the mites, and it disrupts their shell, and they dehydrate.
Right, we get that in cheese judging at the ACS. We'll get things that are clearly dusted in diatomaceous earth.
Really?
Well, I didn't know what the hell it was, so I called over one of the tech guys here and there, and they're like, "Oh yeah, yeah, they're clearly trying to suppress the mites with diatomaceous earth." I was like, "No."
It looks like dirt.
Whatever floats your boat.
That's crazy. I mean, both of my judgings, I actually never knew that, or I never ran across that. I also read that like ozone machines are being used to limit mite damage in large raising facilities and some smaller ones too.
But isn't the problem with that is that it kills everything?
Well, yeah, it takes all the oxygen out. so that's kind of not good for the cheese ripening process, you know. That's interesting to me. I mean, you touched on this before, Matt, but like how do you manage mites as a retailer?
Well, I mean, I got to say that you know, it's we keep them at bay in storage areas. You know, the cheeses are being inspected and brushed and so forth, you know, every day, you know, at least once, of course, and typically more than once, as we're, you know, wrapping them and inspecting them in the morning. But I got to say, it's never really been a problem, even when, you know, like at Formaggio where we had this kind of mite-ridden cave, it really wasn't a problem. The cheese was moving quickly enough, and far from being a deterrent to sales, we found a measured conversation about the mite infestation on the surface actually piqued customers' interest. In my situations over the years, it's never really been a concern. I can imagine a cheesemaker or, you know, some affineur with cheeses being, you know, ravaged by these things. But we found that just keeping them at bay, keeping the big tufts of mite from forming. And if cheeses really did, you know, occasionally we would get cheeses with a wax or a kind of polycoat or whatever they call it, rind, that, you know, give them enough time, the mites are gonna find their way into there in a mighty enough room. So, as long as we're keeping them at bay, and we're not storing a lot of cheese, you know, comparatively, and we're moving it relatively quickly, it's just never really been too much of an issue except kind of as a conversation piece.
Deborah, what's your mightiest cheese that you've dealt with out there in California?
Ooh, do I have to name names?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. Well, I believe it has been corrected, but there was a brief stint when we were receiving Siskelly and Each Other.
Uh-huh.
Magnificent English-style cheese.
Yeah, it's a good cheddar. It's a good cloth-bound cheddar.
Yeah, fantastic flavor.
I haven't had that in a couple years either.
It had gotten an infestation of mites underneath the rind, and they had done really deep damage, like we were seeing. The other thing about them, it's not just the smell or the perceived taste, whatever that may be to your palate, but it's these huge craters. And they were, you know, these puppies were half an inch to an inch deep in the cheese. And it happened in the aging room, and I think they were heavy on age. And this is what happened. The mites were, you know, delighted. And however it came to be. And there was a lot of damage. I mean, there just was a lot of damage in the cheese. So there's these big craters like the face of the moon. And from that, different molds came in, and cracks came in the cheese. And then you got the gray. And it was a lot of waste on a cheese that tasted really good once you cut all that away.
Yeah, those cheddars are nice and sweet and fudgy. And I think I may have gotten one or two of those. I think that was at that might have been the time even when I was out there working. Was that in like 2008, 2007? Around
yeah,
that time?
I think it was. And after that, they started stripping the cloth off before they sold them.
Which
right? And it was like they were cleaning them and stripping the cloth and then packaging them.
So the mites do cut into the profit margin of the cheese then? Like they do, they will make you lose product.
I think so. I mean, I've read 15% to 25% of the weight of your cheese.
Wow, that's a lot of eating.
And I think it depends on age, right?
What do you think, Rubes?
I mean, certainly not in my retail experience. I mean, I was up at Jasper Hill not that long ago, you know, and in there a Cabot cloth bound, and it's very rare that we get a Cabot cloth bound that doesn't have some kind of, you know, light dusting of mites,
right,
which we've never saw as a problem. But, you know, in that room, they're also aging some, you know, more or less rindless cheeses for different purposes. And, you know, there's like a whole palette of ones that were, you know, fairly well ravaged. Not palette's a strong word, but fairly well ravaged.
Right.
It just seems to be, you know, the cost of doing business. I remember years ago we were in there, and I don't know whatever became of it, but they had these, it looked like a big kind of, you know, the sort of file cabinet that you would, you know, an architect would, you know, drawers in which an architect would lay his plans, these big flat drawers, and they were full of mites, and they're experimenting with all kinds of things, even, you know, wondering if mites can be, you know, mites that had been vacuumed, and they do vacuum these things, mites had been vacuumed off of the cheddars could be used in some way, you know, as fertilizer or something. I don't know that anything ever became of that, but. But in the retail environment, you know, it's never really bothered us too much.
Yeah, it only got me back in the day. Have you ever, in the Luigi Gufanti in Arona, in their caves, they have this crazy exhibition. It says like to immortal milk, and it's like this wall where they have these cheeses that have. They must have been down there for years, and they're just so desiccated with mites. It's just a little experiment. But the cheeses I get from the other part of the cave aren't that mighty. It's just like they – I don't know whether they're just attracting them all to that, you know, so that they don't feed on other things. But it's pretty impressive.
I remember Daphne Zeppos telling me, recounting tales of being in the caves in Arona at Luigi Gufanti.
Yeah.
And, you know, Giovanni taking on the tour, this is where we keep the Parmigiano, and this is where the provolone, and this is where we keep our disasters. In the open, just these mighty crusty blocks.
Those guys are insane. Like, they do things like that. Like, I remember walking out, I was like, wow. And I was like, yeah. This is where we keep our disasters.
My apologies to the Fiori boys for my, Guido Sarducci-style Italian imitation.
Nice. Deborah, what do you think of that? Is Matt of a future in the as an Italian impersonator?
I have a well-established career.
I think he should keep all options open.
You're so diplomatic, Deborah. You are. It's very nice. It's very nice.
Well,
those guys all sent me like Gorgonzola, their 300-day Gorgonzola, which is as brown as the wood on my coffee table in the middle.
It's going to have mites on it.
It does. It had like mites, and I had never. There was like no rind on it either. That's insane. Well, that's good. Well, I enjoyed having you guys on to talk about mites. I mean, we learned a little bit today. We learned that Matt is looking on YouTube for strange semi-pornographic cheese videos of English people eating Stilton.
Always am.
And we learned a little bit about how to take care of mites with toxic poisons or with volcanic dirt. I think I'm going to go with the volcanic dirt. You got to hear me read a poem, so all of that was fantastic. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Deborah and Matt. I think if there's a takeaway to this episode, it's that good, real food isn't sterile. Sometimes it's those things that scare us that give us the food its character, and it link it to a place and time. So thanks for listening, and tune in next week for more Cutting the Curd.
Thanks. Always a pleasure.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat & 3.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.